Ooh, a little didgeridoo. What do you say? I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today on The Larry Mueller Show. And I suppose if you were going to say, why are we doing the didgeridoo today? You'd have to say, Australia. Well, you know, if you were looking to get away this winter and find the middle of summer, I imagine you would want to visit Australia. And here to tell us about it with a travel guide, Glenn Schmidt. He is the author of Travel Lessons, Your Personal Guide to Better Travel, which is available now on Amazon.com. And get ready for his new book coming out this spring, Travel Lessons for Seniors, published by Henschel House Books out of Milwaukee. And Glenn, welcome back to The Larry Mueller Show.
Good to be here.
When'd you go to Australia?
You know, I came back on Saturday night, and you would hope that jet lag would kind of release you.
Yeah.
But yesterday, my wife came home about 2:30 in the afternoon, and she said, why are you in bed? I said, because I see no reason to get out.
But you just, I mean, you just got back then.
I did. So it is awfully fresh in my mind.
How long were you there?
I was there a couple of weeks.
And would you, if I were to visit Australia, would you say 2 weeks is a bit too long or just right?
Well, you take what you can get. And,
okay.
You know, that's what I could get on this trip. But, you know, ideally you'd want to, I mean, it's a country as big as the U.S. in area. But the fact is that there's almost nothing in the interior.
Right.
And everybody lives on the coast. Particularly, I spent most of my time in Melbourne and Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
And they're really interesting cities in themselves. They're each about 5.5 million people.
Whoa.
You know, I always thought, well, Sydney's a big city. But they're both about the same now. But they have a very different feel to them.
How would you compare them?
There's a cliche out there in Australia that if you like Los Angeles, you will love Sydney. And if you like New York City, you'll love Melbourne.
Well, I don't know a lot of people that love L.A.
Well, there is that.
The thing I think of first and foremost, Glenn Schmidt, when I think of traveling to Australia is the travel itself.
Yes.
That would take, I believe, how long did it take for you to get there?
Well, it took me 34 hours.
That's a travel.
That is. Now, you can do it in a little bit less time. So there were actually seven of us on this trip.
Oh.
And we didn't all take the same flights. I wanted to be on Cathay Pacific. Now, have you ever heard of that airline?
I have not.
Well, it always ends up in the top five in any list of good airlines. And I had read about it, and I had seen YouTube videos on it, and I thought, I need to try that. But a friend of mine took a United flight directly from Chicago to Sydney. And if you do that, you don't have to do 34 hours. You can get by with under 30.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter. I
mean, but you'd plan for more than a day of travel.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which would screw up your body clock, I would imagine. So how do you adjust once you get there, Glenn?
I've always found in all the travels I've done is you get on schedule as soon as you can. As soon as you, you land, you reset your watch or you let your phone get reset, and that is your body time now. And so you kind of force it.
Is travel cost prohibitive?
Here's the thing about travel down there. If you just travel in economy, would it surprise you to know that paying more money makes it more comfortable? Here's the deal. My friend Mary Jo, who took the United flights out of Chicago, paid about $1,600 round trip on United. Now, I paid about double that, about $3,400, just so I could try that premium economy. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you get for premium economy? Well, instead of, they call it pitch between the seats. So instead of 32 inches, which is typical in economy, you get 40 inches between you and the seat in front of you. And as far as
leg room.
Well, yeah. And as far as width, the seats in premium are, they're 2, 4, and 2. In economy, they're 3, 4, and 3.
Uh-huh.
So you can tell that you're going to have really a lot more room. But, you know, you're still in a metal tube.
Right, for a long, long time.
For a long time, yes.
Yeah, but once you arrive, what's it like landing in Australia and you get out and the air, what's it smell like? What's it look like? I mean, it's a different world. It's a different continent.
That's pretty visceral. And I don't know how to answer that, because by the time you get there, your senses are so numb that it's awfully hard to, you know, it's about all you can do to get out the door and hail a taxi and get to your hotel. But let me take a little side trip here, Lee, if you don't mind. If you've ever followed Uber at all,
sure,
and how they operate around the globe, I find them fascinating. I tend to take taxis rather than Uber, but occasionally I'll take an Uber. But in Sydney, the taxis have given up the premium spot right in front of the airport, and now that's Uber.
Okay.
So there must have been some kind of deal that they've come to, because in many places, like you go into Rome, Rome has done their best to absolutely eliminate Uber.
Interesting.
And so you've got very different things happening if that's how you plan on getting around. You better check to make sure if it's going to work for you.
So you went to Australia just last week.
Yeah.
What's it like down there this time
of year? Well, it's spring. But the first thing I discovered is that spring allergies down there are just as much fun as they are in Wisconsin.
I would never have thought of that. Spring allergies.
Exactly. And my brother and I were walking down a Melbourne street, and I don't know, something blew our way, but we're both having a sneezing attack walking down the street. And I think, okay, you can't get away from that.
No, you can't. So would you be able to, what's the best time of year to go to Australia?
I would say this is the time to go. If you get into summer, the locals said, you know, it's awfully hot and steamy here.
Even on the coast.
Even on the coast, you know, Sydney especially, and the reason they compare it to L.A. is if you get just a little bit out of Sydney, it's kind of a beach culture.
Oh,
so okay. From downtown Sydney, right by the Opera House, you hop onto a ferry and you go to Manly Beach. And Manly Beach is, when we were there, I don't know if you could have found a place to put a blanket down. There were so many people.
Really?
Yeah.
This is kind of off season.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, but you know, Sydney itself, though, I found to be, I would compare it more to Chicago. I saw more people wearing suits in Sydney and more women wearing impractical shoes than at any time since I used to go to Washington, D.C. regularly.
Yeah.
So I found it very formal in that way.
Was it easy to understand the Australian accent?
Not a bit. And I've actually tried to emulate it, and my son said to me, "Dad, don't do that."
You want to give it a shot here?
Not a chance. No. I've been warned. He's listening.
What was your relationship like with the people that you did get to meet?
Well, it's a little more complicated than that. We have friends in Sydney, and part of the reason for going there was to see them. I've been active in the international teachers unions.
Sure.
And when I was in Brazil about, I don't know, 15, 16 years ago, I met Maury from Australia, who became the president of the New South Wales Teachers Union. And so anyway, we went down. We've traveled with Maury and Helen, and so we went down to visit him. And every time that Maury came and did something, that was the best part of the trip. Because when you see it through the eyes of a local, you know, that you can't duplicate that.
Then you're not a tourist anymore. You're a guest.
You're a guest.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a difference there, right?
Yeah. Well, and Maury has an extra gear, too. He wasn't just a teacher's union leader. He's a folk singer. Who has, I don't know, four or five albums out. And when we stopped at his house, we took the train about an hour south of Sydney, and he picked us up. And after we had dessert at their house, he kind of gave us an impromptu concert.
Oh.
And so...
Man, Glenn.
Yeah, so that was very cool.
The food in Australia?
Well, you know, obviously you're going to have a lot of seafood. I mean, everybody's on the coast. And so there's a fish called barramundi.
Barramundi.
Yes. You ever heard of that?
I have heard of it, but I've never tasted it.
It seemed to be on every menu that we encountered. So it was ubiquitous down there. And it was very good. But it came in all sorts of different configurations.
Barramundi and...
But the main thing is that you can't overestimate the Asian influence in Australia. About a third of Australians were not born in Australia.
Sure.
And most of them are really coming from Asian countries around there. So there are all sorts of restaurants from places around the world and countries that you've never even... into.
Yum cha.
Yum cha. That's right.
What is it?
I had never heard of that. But so our friend Maury took us to Chinatown in Sydney, and we had yum cha. And that consists of, it kind of loosely translates to brunch in, you know,
okay.
From our point of view. But you sit at a large communal table, and about every 2 or 3 minutes, a trolley comes over. And they have, you know, some delightful thing that, and they ask, you know, how many of these pork buns do you want, or, you know, whatever
all of
it
them.
Is. Yeah. Yeah.
So the buffet comes to you.
The buffet comes to you. I like that. That's good.
I'm yum cha. That's on my list.
Yeah.
And if you were going to Australia, what would you want to see? What questions do you have about going down under? You can join our conversation with our tour guide, Glenn Schmidt, by giving a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email the show anytime, talk@wpr.org. Glenn's the author of Travel Lessons, Your Personal Guide to Better Travel, available now on Amazon.com. And coming out this spring, look for it, Glenn Schmidt's latest book, Travel Lessons for Seniors, published by Henschel House Books out of Milwaukee. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry Mueller today, and we'll continue touring Australia after a look at the news. This is WPR News. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry Mueller today. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show and the Didgeridoo, which takes us down under with our travel guide, Glenn Schmidt, joining us. He's the author of Travel Lessons, Your Personal Guide to Better Travel, and the upcoming book, look for it this spring, Travel Lessons for Seniors. On Saturday, Glenn returned from his two-week voyage to the Down Under, and he's here to report back on what to see if you go, when you go, and what perhaps you can skip. And Glenn, you said you were in Sydney and Melbourne and some of the outlying areas, but when I think of Sydney, I think of the Sydney Opera House, and I'm wondering what you would recommend when it came to visiting, touring this world wonder.
It is a stunning building. There's no question about that. But if you go down there, I would highly recommend going to an event there. They're very accessible, and they kept stressing to us that this is an event center. We're not just putting operas on. We're not just putting symphonies out there. And when we were there, the musical Rent was on.
Oh.
And also in the other theater, there was something to do with Donna Summer and her music and disco. And so it's not really what you expect from an opera house. But as far as the tour was concerned, the building itself is, you can imagine, it's just balkanized. I mean, it looks spectacular from the water or from the harbor bridge. We actually walked across the harbor bridge, and it's a spectacular view. But, you know, walking around the opera house itself is really chopped up, and there are just tons of stairways that I got kind of tired of real fast.
So see an event there and maybe skip the tour.
That's what I would do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you have questions about traveling the Outback or the Down Under, you can join our conversation with Glenn at 1-800-642-1234 or talk@wpr.org.
Can I talk about the Blue Mountains for a second?
Yeah, so, what are the Blue Mountains?
Well, we got out of Sydney by taking a day tour to the Blue Mountains, and I would call it their Grand Canyon. I mean, it is absolutely spectacular. And they took us out there, and but what the Aussies have a wonderful sense of humor, and it's unlike any. Can I give you an example?
Yes,
of it?
Please.
All right, here's an example. Our guide said to us, "Okay, I'm taking you up here to this site," and he said, "but I won't be going on the aerial tram ride with you. It has an appalling safety record."
You guys have fun.
Yeah, that's right. You guys have fun. And another one was one of the drivers said, "Your driver will be a little bit late. He's just leaving the pub now."
Okay. All right.
So that's Australian humor.
See how you react and what sort of sense of humor you have, Glenn.
Exactly.
That's
perfect. But taking the tram down the mountain was spectacular. And then there's kind of a cog railway where you come back up. Mm. And it is probably scarier than the tram ride was.
Wow. So, what about the wildlife in Australia?
Well, we went to two different places. The Sydney Zoo, which I absolutely would not recommend.
Oof.
And a place about an hour south of there that I thought was much better. But there is a zoo in Sydney that is a much better one. We just ended up at the wrong one, I'm afraid. And we picked a bad day, too. There was about 40-mile-an-hour winds going on.
Okay.
And so they had taken many or most of the animals inside for obvious reasons. So, yeah, you can see plenty of wildlife there. But, you know, what are you mainly looking for? You know, I'm looking for a kangaroo. And the red kangaroo is just not native to that part of Australia. So when we asked about it, they said, well, there's two reasons. You know, it's not native to this, and they're really mean. they've got a kick to them.
I noticed that kangaroo meat was on the menu in some places.
I didn't try it. It didn't seem right to me. But one of the people with us tried it, and she found it fairly tasty. But the other animal that everybody wants to
koala.
See is a koala.
Yes, please.
And so at one of the places we were at, we were treated to like 10 or 15 minutes of a guide holding the koala in her arms while she talked about eucalyptus leaves and the different things that you have to do to keep a koala going. So that part was pretty cool.
What are some of the hot spots that you would make a point of making sure to see in Sydney? I mean, the Opera House, go to a show, skip the tour, the zoo, skip it all together. What are some of the hot spots?
I think the first thing that I would say is, you know, learn to get around the town using the trams.
Mass transportation.
Mass transit. There is always a tram going by on the rails. Our hotel, the tram was right outside the door, and they had a very slick way of using them. All you had to do is take your credit card, tap a spot on a post mm-hmm. right by the tram, and then when you got off on the other end, do a tap. And we checked on, so one time when we went to Chinatown, you know, one of our people was checking to see what it cost, and it was 66 cents for that ride. So, and what's magic about 66 cents? Well, that is how much an Australian dollar is worth compared to a U.S. dollar.
Oh.
So when you see a menu and it says something is $40, well, okay, divide that by, take a third off of that to see what the actual price is.
Hmm.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is definitely use the ferries that are many of them.
You took one to the beach.
We took one to the beach. And the funny thing about that, so it's to Manly. Uh-huh. And so we went to Manly. We didn't know what we were going to do there. We just hopped on the ferry, and then we got off, and then we just followed the crowd, and we get to a beach, and there are all these people on the beach. But the place I was aiming for was called Hemingway's. Now, I've been collecting Hemingway places from all over the world. So in my next book, I've got the top five Hemingway bars that I've been to, because, you know, what's Hemingway known for, after all?
Writing, Glenn.
Well, writing. Yeah, that's what I meant to say. But... and I've read probably 15 or 20 Hemingway biographies, and I know that Hemingway never went to Australia. I mean, he went to Africa, he went to Asia, he never went to Australia. But this was Hemingway's, and they had all sorts of memorabilia inside for him, and it was still a good experience, even though it was kind of inauthentic.
Well, he'd never been there. It didn't mean that there wasn't some part of... Maybe the cats or something from Key West.
Oh, the cats from, yeah.
You also traveled to Melbourne, and when it came to the sights in Melbourne, what would you make sure to see, and what could you leave off the list?
Well, the big thing in Melbourne is to go to the Sky Deck. The Sky Deck is the highest vantage point in the Southern Hemisphere. So you go up into this skyscraper, and you go into a room, and it's kind of a cantilevered sort of a thing where it goes out away from the building, and then the floor becomes transparent. So it might bother some people to go out on that. But before you even get up to the 88th floor of this building, they put you through a virtual experience. They put you in an egg-shaped chair, and then they give you some VR glasses, and you get a tour of Melbourne. And it's a very realistic tour because the first thing, you're in a helicopter, and this chair, you know, makes it feel like...
Oh, where it drops out on you and you feel the...
Exactly, and then you're on a roller coaster, and you're, honest to God, you're putting your hands down looking for a seatbelt because, you know, the chair is kind of pushing you forward when the, roller coaster
is
going.
Even before you get to the sky deck.
That exactly, yeah. So they've kind of prepped you, and... If you're a little bit tending to motion sickness, you might want to skip that part. I was a little queasy when I got to the top.
Other points of Melbourne to hit up?
Melbourne, I would say the biggest thing there is we talked a little bit about the food, but the Asian food places in particular. We were there the last night, and it was just my brother and me, and I said, let's just bail out. There's a Kentucky Fried Chicken across the street. And he said, I'm not doing that. I said, okay, I agree with you.
I can feel the inertia, American pull towards, let's just go get some fried chicken at KFC. I get it, Glenn.
So we went instead across the street to a place that said, I love chicken. That was the name of the place. It was a Japanese chicken restaurant. And it was, I hate to say it, but it was way better than we would have gotten at the other place. But there was one problem with it. And they gave you your utensils.
Uh-huh.
Guess what? It's not a spork. It's chopsticks. And so...
Shouldn't you be well versed in chopsticks at this point?
Well, yes,
Glenn
I
Schmidt?
Should, but I would be if I lived there, I'd be a lot thinner because it's
it's a lot of work.
Yes, it takes a little longer to do it that way.
But kudos to you and your brother for not asking for a spork.
Oh,
I know. Would they know what a spork is in Australia?
I don't know.
Did you have? Was that the best meal you had, would you say? Or?
The best meal was probably at the seafood restaurant right on the harbor. And it in my guidebooks, I use Arthur Frommer's Australia, and I think that's a terrific guidebook series. But this area didn't get a lot of love. But when I went there, this harbor area had three different levels of restaurants just circling the bottom of the harbor, and it was all lit up, and it was just spectacular at night. And it's like you could probably pick any random restaurant there, and you'd have great food, especially seafood.
Right.
So that was the best meal that we had there, I would say.
Glenn Schmidt joining us, just returned from Australia in a couple weeks in Sydney and Melbourne and the outlying areas. And if you'd like to join the conversation with questions for Glenn or your own Australian experiences, you can give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Rachel in Mosinee. Rachel, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
You asked what was our favorite thing that we saw or did when we were in Australia.
Absolutely.
Actually, I loved it all. We saw so many things. But the most memorable was the little penguins. We waited on a beach to see them, and we got talking to an Aussie who was sitting there, and we became friends. And we have stayed friends over the years. They are wonderful people. They are so darn helpful and so friendly.
How long ago was this, Rachel?
It's probably been 10 years now.
And where were the penguins?
I'm just getting out my atlas here. We were on the beach across the water from Tasmania.
Oh, wow. Oh. I did not think of... Rachel, thank you so much for the call, because I did not think of penguins in Australia. Of a million things that I would expect to find in Australia, Glenn, penguins not on the list.
Penguins definitely are on the list down there. We did not get to Tasmania, but Tasmania has its own charms that... if I do another trip over there, I'll be certain to go there.
How far away is that from the Sydney-Melbourne?
It would be just a quick flight from Melbourne.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, it's just over the water. But here's one of the other things that I think people should go to. I love going to markets wherever I am.
Local markets.
Yes. And the one in Melbourne is called the Queen Victoria Market. And it is one of the best markets in Australia. But here's where preparation comes in. It turns out they have the market every day but Monday. But on Wednesday, it turns out it's a night market, and it opens at 5. So guess which day we went to the market? Well, it was Wednesday, and yeah, no, we didn't. It didn't work very well. But the one we went to in Sydney is called The Rocks. And this is an area not far from the Opera House, and it's kind of the old part of Sydney. And for a while, they were trying to gentrify it, but it is still really unique and very old. And so drifting among the different stalls there, my brother actually bought a hat that made him look like Crocodile Dundee. So.
Yeah. Well, win in Australia, Glenn.
Well, exactly.
Rachel, thank you again for the call. You enlightened me about all the things that you can find in Australia. Glenn, you've got a new book coming out here, coming up this spring, Travel Lessons for Seniors. And I'm curious a little, I really want to know, for the sake of my parents and other, you know, folks who still want to travel, but understand that they may be limited in ways that, you know, they didn't used to be, how to accommodate for themselves and still find ways to get around the world.
I just had this discussion with my publisher a couple of weeks ago, and we sat down, and she said, and I said, what do you think of this? The first book is called Travel Lessons, mm-hmm. but I'd like the next one to be Travel Lessons for Seniors. And she said, you know that publishers love to have your target audience in your title. And she said, that's who you're selling your book to anyway, because Amazon will break things down for you. You know, as far as the categories of travel that you're doing well in. What you'll see in the next book, and it's about 80% done, is you'll see sections of it that are just aimed specifically at senior travelers and what makes them a little bit different. For example, while taking local transportation is sometimes a great idea, Often a place like Paris, where there are so many steps going down into the metro and coming back out, and often a very long walk between metro stations. So that'd be very difficult, as opposed to taking a cab ride across town. So you make those accommodations. But the other thing is that you'll see kind of stuck in most of the articles and pieces that are in it, you'll see a different point of view that takes into account the fact that that you know maybe you've just retired, and you just want to travel, but you don't necessarily want to go on the tour,
right?
Because my attitude about tours is if you got to go on a tour, go ahead and do that. I really try to avoid them as much as I can and do my own traveling and do my own booking and stuff like that. And I think you see a much better piece of the places you go if you have that kind of knowledge where you're comfortable enough to do that.
So yeah, with Travel Lessons for Seniors, is this going to take us around the world again, Glenn? Is this...
It is actually going to take you around the world even more than the first book did, because I felt I didn't do justice to Asia, and I didn't mention Australia at all in the first book. I didn't do enough of South America. I was really very Europe-centered, and there'll still be plenty of, I mean, I love Paris, so I'll go back there in a heartbeat. But there'll be a lot of the rest of the world, too. And that includes cruising. Now, if you want something that's really aimed at your parents and at seniors,
yes.
Cruising is something that is much more doable. If you're having a bad day and your lumbago's acting up, don't get off the boat. You know, don't worry. They're still going to feed you. They're still going to entertain you. And it's a good way to do it. But you have to pick the right cruise line, the right cruise ship. If you don't do that, you know, if you're an older person, you pick Carnival. You know, if you don't mind being around drunk 30-year-olds throwing up, and I shouldn't say that, but it's a different clientele than perhaps if you're on a Cunard ship dressing up every night.
You're looking for an experience with people who are having the same experience around you, not folks who are on a different demographic altogether in a different schedule.
Exactly. Yeah.
You have any trips on the horizon? Now, I understand you just got back from Australia on Saturday.
I did, but I'm always planning two or three trips ahead. So I will be getting on a ship in Hong Kong in early February. And the ship will be taking us from Hong Kong up to Taiwan and then Japan, and we will finish in Korea.
Oh, wow. How long will that trip take?
That's about 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah. What kind of group are you bringing with you?
Well, that's interesting. That's an interesting question. We've actually got about 10 cabins. I have been working with a travel agent out at Easttown at AAA. And so I've got friends who, when they heard about this, they said, well, we want in on that. So,
yeah.
So we've got about 10 cabins that are... it'll be a nice group that we're traveling with. But it's a small ship, too. It's an Oceania ship, which holds fewer than 1,000 people. And most of the cruise ships that you get on Holland America and Norwegian and stuff, they're around 3,000 people. So the cool thing about these smaller ships is they can usually dock in a better place.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And last year we were on one that docked in Monte Carlo. Last time I was in that area with a bigger ship, we had a dock out of the harbor and tender in.
Mm-hmm.
And this time we were docking in the harbor, a much better experience because you just get off the boat and you're in the middle of town.
You're much more worldly than me. I have not been around like you have.
But you're invited to join us on the next trip.
I'm thinking about it, Glenn. I'm thinking about it seriously. But it's something that Rachel said that stuck with me that I want to know from you. The people around the world, when you meet them and they meet you, that connection that you make, even across cultures, across languages or dialects, what does that mean to you?
Well, I love doing that, and it's impossible to avoid politics. it really is. And I talked to a few Australians who, you know, they still love Americans, but they said, well, we don't want to come over right now. We've seen that you don't treat tourists or travelers very well over there, so we just as soon pass on that, which I feel kind of sad about that.
Yeah.
But You know, it shouldn't keep any of us from going abroad. People are still people.
No matter where you go.
Wherever you go, yeah.
And Glenn's been everywhere.
Yeah, no, I haven't.
Well, where do you still want to go?
There's 200 countries in the world.
What are you missing?
I did go through them, and I've been to about 60 of them so far. So, you know, I'm barely a third of the way.
Only 140 to go, Glenn.
There's a chance I could run out of time.
He is the author of Travel Lessons, Your Personal Guide to Better Travel on Amazon. His upcoming book, Travel Lessons for Seniors, just back from Australia on Saturday. Glenn Schmidt, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Delightful. Thank you.
When we continue, the new season of Wisconsin Life on PBS Wisconsin is now underway with a new episode premiering tonight, and we have your preview next. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller, and you're listening to A Didgeridoo.